Appreciate everybody being here this morning. It's a beautiful day. And what my intentions are, does everybody have a lesson?
Yes.
What my intentions are is to do page one today and then do page two next week. We'll see how that goes, but that's what I'm hoping. And then Sandra will teach one, possibly 2 weeks. And we need to be thinking, I know there's not very many of us here, but Sandra's class may only go 1 week. She had thought it would go two, but she's thinking it'll probably only go one. So if someone would like to teach a one class, one or two class thing, we will go ahead and extend the class. If not, we will just dismiss at that time. So that will probably be like into the, we'll have at least the first week in May. And then after that, we would just dismiss the class until fall, if that's okay with everybody. Okay. This morning, this lesson really, the first time I developed it, it was just the second page. One time when Linda was sick, and I thought I was going to have to teach, on Tuesday she was sick, and I thought I was going to teach Wednesday morning, so I did something real quick that I had already kind of started. But so when I thought, okay, I'll teach two classes, I decided to expand it. So I wanted to look at the duties, first of all. The second lesson is going to look at why. What difference does it make? But I went, okay, what difference does it make about what? About what we are expected as godly women. And so many times, what do we think of when we think of godly women duties? What's the first thing that comes to mind? Okay. Obeying your husband. Doing domestic things more. Raising the children. And I'm hoping that through this lesson we'll see that there's more to us than that. We read all the books in the Bible, and it was interesting, I looked, and every letter that Paul wrote, he either said to the churches, or to the saints, or to the saints and brethren. And so everything that are in those letters, and even James and Peter and 2 John, are all addressed to either saints, brethren, godly, something that should pertain to us as well. I'm afraid sometimes I've been guilty. You read through and you think, oh, well, that's the men's duty. You know, I'm a woman. I don't have the same duties. But we are Christians. When Paul wrote these letters, he didn't say to the men Christians or to the men brethren or to the men in the church. He said to the churches. And so this includes all of us. So when we think about what our duties are, we need to remember that these letters and the books that we read and draw our strength from were written to men and women. And so whatever we read, unless it's specified, like in Ephesians 5, there are parts there that are to the men and to the women, and also in Ephesians 6, parents and children, there are some things that, because of your relationship, are a special duty that God places upon us. But as we look through these, the duties that we have here, and we're going to start out with looking, what are our duties to a neighbor? Let's look at Luke chapter 10. And we're not going to read all 12 or 13 of these verses here, but what I want us to do is look and see that, first of all, let me just ask you, what is our duty to a neighbor? What's our duty to our neighbor? Love your neighbor as we love ourselves. And so as we read this story, before we go back and look at it in some specific passages, how could you sum up how this man showed to be his neighbor? What did he do?
He helped him when he needed help.
That's right. He took care of him and even provided for him after he left. There are three questions here and there are three answers. And so many times we get the questions and the answers mixed up. So what I've done in my Bible is I went through and marked the questions. It's like question one, answer one, question two, answer two, question three, answer three. So that as you're reading through here and you're talking with somebody, it stands out to you that, oh, let me be sure I'm answering the right question with the right answer, because there are three questions and three answers here. The first question, this lawyer is wanting to know, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And so many people answer question one with answer three. if I'm a good neighbor, I'm going to go to heaven. If I just take care of my neighbor, that's all I need to do. But there's more to it than that. So the answer to that question is in verse 27. And he answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said, you're right. And but it didn't stop there. You know, sometimes when we get an answer and we don't like the answer, and so we ask another question to try to be a little more specific so maybe we can get the answer we want. And so he asked another, the lawyer asked Jesus another question. Who is my neighbor? And so we think, okay, who is my neighbor? And so Jesus answers that with the whole thing of 30 through 37 by showing who is your neighbor. Here we have a Jew who is hurt, and he was on his way to Jerusalem, from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers. Well, he was left there to die. And a priest came by, and he didn't stop. A Levite came by, and he didn't stop. Who would you think would be the first to help? Priests and Levites, the priests were the teachers of the law. They knew what the law taught and what the law meant. And a Levite, who was not a priest, but he was of the priestly tribe, he was the one who was involved in the work of the temple and helping the priests do their work. You would think, well, surely he would know. No, and he would know what his responsibility is, and he would take care of it. But no, they both passed by on the other side of the street. And finally, along comes a Samaritan, and Samaritan and Jews, this would have been like back in the days, in the South, in the days of the Civil War, a white man stopping to help a black man who had been left to die, or vice versa, a black man stopping to help a white man. Because their hatred, I don't even know if the hatred of the blacks and whites would begin to compare with the Jew and the Gentile, and especially the Samaritans, because they were a mixed race. And boy, I've read that Jews going up to Galilee would go around Samaria. They would not go through Samaria. They would go around, take a long way around, just so they didn't have to pass through where the Samaritans lived. They hated each other that much. And that's what, when Jesus talked to the woman at the well and she was a Samaritan, that was what was so remarkable to his disciples. This is a woman and a Samaritan. Good grief, you know, what's wrong with him? So, and then down in question 3, Jesus asked a question. I mean, in verse 36, we have question 3, and Jesus is the one who is asking the question. He asked, which of these three do you think? Okay, I've got a mouthpiece in. Let me take this out. My tongue gets caught. Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man? And then the lawyer had to answer the one who showed mercy. And so Jesus said, go and do the same. But that's the one, when he told him to go and do the same, that's the lawyer answering Jesus' question, not the other way around. So we think of, okay, who is my neighbor? Who is our neighbor?
Everyone.
Everybody, anyone that we can have any opportunity to show this kind of love to, whether we know them, it may be somebody we know that we don't like. They're still our neighbor. No matter what the circumstances is, we are to do whatever we can. It may not be financial. It may just be taking food to your neighbor, to someone who lives by you. Or I think this came home to me when Mickey was sick. There were people who never knew Mickey and Celeste who came, and like one day Celeste needed water and she just put it out on the internet because they had a well and they told them not to let Mickey drink the well water because of the impurities and stuff in it. And so she was out of bottled water and it was on a Saturday morning and she put out an email. Within just a few hours, she had about 50 gallons of water. I mean, the people just, she finally put out another note, please don't bring any more water, I can't store it. People who did not know them, but had a friend that had told them about Mickey and they were keeping up on Facebook or heard it in town, showed up with water, had never laid eyes on them. And I thought, you know, and then when the day of the benefit they had for Mickey, there were people there who just said, I saw it in town and I knew that, you know, it was someone and it was a good cause. Is kind of the way they put it. So I think of that when I see benefits, that they're having food, you know, having a bake sale or a barbecue or something like that. Do I just stop just because they're a neighbor? That's not much I can do, but I can do that. And so we have to come to grips with this ourselves. What can I do? God, remember this. All through this lesson, I want us to keep in mind that we are judged by our ability and our the occasion for us to do something. God does not expect us to try to save the world as far as financial. You know, there's people starving. There are people in this country that are hungry. I have a hard time with the people standing on the street corner begging for money when I think they're probably going to take my money and go buy drugs or beer. I have a hard time helping those kind of people. I feel like there's enough people that I can find to help that I can know something about the situation. Now, if that same person was hit by a car and needed me to pick them up and take them to the hospital or pick them up and buy them food. You know, we've done that before. We've been approached by people. Even in town, Linda and I one day were in the Walmart parking lot. I think it was one day after we'd left lunch with everybody somewhere. And that someone approached her, and I went with her, and they asked for food. And so she took them and bought them food. There's one thing to buy somebody food because they're hungry than to just hand them a dollar or $5, what they want. I saw on a news report one night, some of the people, this has been several years ago, but a lot of the people standing on the street corners are put there by people. It's almost like a prostitute who has a pimp. They put them in a place, and then they take a percentage of their money. And then usually, what one guy they interviewed, he said, I'll work 3 or 4 days a week because I know I can make enough in that 3 or 4 days to pay for my liquor the rest of the week. And I thought, well, you know, if you buy food, that's one thing. So I have a hard time with that. So I'm just because you see somebody who says they need help, sometimes you need more information. But we do need to look for opportunities. And as women, we might be a little more leery of stopping by to help the man who'd been robbed, because they may still be in the bushes and we're just a woman. What are we going to do? In fact, the preacher who married Stephen and I was taking a trip to visit his mother. In fact, his mother was real ill in Tennessee, and they lived in Port Arthur. And they were driving, and they were in a real big hurry to get there. And there was a couple on the side of the road that needed help. And usually that's something they would do, is stop and help. But they were in a real big hurry because they wanted to get there before his mother. They were afraid his mother was going to die. And the next day on the news, in that very same area, about the same time they were passing through there, someone else had stopped to help a couple on the side of the road, and they beat them, left them for dead, and stole their car. And so, you know, you hear stories like that and you think, ooh, but we can't let things like that freeze us and keep us. Use common sense, but do try to find opportunities to help our neighbor. Betty?
Well, nowadays when you see stuff like that, if you really think someone really needs help, it's probably better just to call the police and tell them, I saw such and such, and they look like they really need help.
Yeah, everybody has cell phones these days. You can call 911 and say, this is the situation, this is where they are. So that's a very good point. Okay, any questions or comments on our responsibilities and duties as a woman to our neighbor? Sometimes I think women have a little more sympathy than men do in this area, really, because like taking a neighbor food or offering to help a mother, you know, with her children, she's got a doctor's appointment, can you pick up my kids from school, and those kind of things. And those are just duties we do because we're neighbors, not because we're a Christian, just simply because we're a neighbor. Okay, any questions before we move on to brethren? Okay. We have four areas here that we're going to look at, and the first one is in 1 John 4:11. And Susan, would you read that, please?
Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another.
Okay. I didn't look at my notes close enough. Read 7 through 11, please.
Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. By this, the love of God was manifested in us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world so that we might live with him. And this is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another.
Okay, so really, this is the love that is the caring love, that we will put someone else above ourselves because that's what God did for us. He sent his Son it's a package deal. So many people say, I love God, and then they just treat their brethren horribly. And you can't say you love God if you don't love your brethren. In fact, Jamie, can you read verse 19 and 20 of this same chapter, please?
We love him because he first loved us. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For the person who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen.
So we can't, this is how we show we love God, by the love we have for our brethren and the way we treat our brethren. And if Jesus loved us enough to come and die for us, am I not willing to give up and to, as we're going to look in the next that we're going to be willing to treat them right no matter who they are and what they are. They're our brethren. That is the first and foremost. We have different natures. We have different customs. We have different cultures. But if we're Christians and we're all trying to serve God, we're going to love that brother. And this is the kind of love that I believe that we talked about in the love your neighbor. This is the love your neighbor kind of love, but it's especially heightened because they're my brother. I should seek more opportunity and be sure that I take care of whatever their needs are and take care of them and see about them and show this kind of love, this sacrificing, the self-sacrificing kind of love. Let's look at Romans 12:16. Amy, can you read that, or you got your lap full?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
16.
Okay. Be of the same mind with one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation.
Okay, so how would you answer this? How should we treat our brethren here? What I'm doing all the talking. What's when somebody come up with on this one? Okay. Treat them with respect no matter what their social, economical, ethnical, whatever their background is, they're our brethren, and that we are to put them above ourselves and to, you know, sometimes we don't have respect for people that we should have. Sometimes there are personality differences, and I've seen that in people, and some people you meet and you just click with and you feel like you've been friends forever. And there's other people that you meet that you have to work hard to even get them in a conversation, to get them to be. And so if you naturally gravitate to the people that are easy and open and easy to visit with, and it's easy to help them because they let you know. Some of the other brethren, we have to work at it a little harder. Have to work it harder at getting to know them and showing that respect for them. And so we need to treat each other with respect and this love no matter what. And it was in Luke 10, it was the Samaritan who proved to be the neighbor and showed this caring love. And so among brethren, would we respect someone and really go out of our way to help them? Sometimes it's almost like if we don't like somebody or have had a problem with somebody, and what are we supposed to do if we have a problem with a brother?
Go to them.
That's right. And if you know they have something against you, what are you supposed to do?
Go to them.
And so you think, well, that's not fair. That doesn't seem right. That's what God says. And if I really love and respect my brother, I'm going to go see what. I would go to the person that maybe that I'm close friends with, and there seems to be a problem here. I want to know what that is. But with the person that maybe I'm not quite as close to, and it's almost a relief they don't talk to me anymore because it's so hard. And I feel like maybe they feel like I've done something, or there's something just, it's worse than normal. I still have that obligation to go and see what's the problem. It may just be that this person is struggling with their faith or with a family situation that I can help. And so we're supposed to, verse 17 says, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. And so I need to do, this is my brother, and I need to do what is right and show respect in all things so I can gain respect from others. Okay, any questions here? Okay, let's look at Romans 14, 19 and Ephesians 4, 29. We'll read both of those and then we'll talk about them. Betty, would you read Romans 14, 19? And then Bobby, would you read Ephesians 4, 29?
So then we pursue the things which make for peace and the building up of one another.
Okay. Bobby, go ahead. When you get there.
Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it may give grace to those who hear.
So what is our responsibility to our brother here? What is our duty to our brethren in these two passages?
To build them up, to encourage them.
This is more of a spiritual context, isn't it? This is... We think about the things that we can do for them physically. You know, there are people that we would never miss taking food to somebody. But if you know somebody is struggling spiritually or has a spiritual problem or maybe something you're doing that is causing them to be discouraged, what's the easiest thing to do? That's right, ignore it. Just, that's their problem. But in this context of Romans, if we go back to Romans, Elizabeth, read 21 through 23, please. Start in 20, actually.
14?
Mm-hmm. 14, 20 through 23.
Okay. Do not tear down the work of God for the sake of food. All things indeed are clean, but they are evil for the man who eats and gives offense. It is good not to eat meat or to drink wine or to do anything by which your brother stumbles. The faith which you have it your own conviction before God. Happy is he who does not condemn himself in what he approves. But he who doubts is condemned if he eats, because his eating is not from faith, and whatever is not from faith is sin.
Does this mean if I think something's wrong, or not wrong, I'll put it this way. If I think something is not wrong, I should sacrifice my liberty for somebody else?
Yeah.
It does. In this case, it was the eating of meats. And these meats were, some of the time, these meats were sacrificed to idols. And Paul in another place says, if you go and you buy the meat, don't ask. If you go to the marketplace and buy the meat, don't ask where it came from. But if somebody invites you into their house and they say, this meat was sacrificed to idols, you're not to eat it. So that's your conscience. So we have to do what's right in our own conscience. But sometimes our conscience says, just like there were people probably who, if they went to the marketplace, in their conscience, they would have to ask. And if it was, they couldn't eat it. And so what I'm supposed to do is give up my liberties of even eating meat or drinking wine in this passage, which is not the wine like we think of. But anyway, it's something so, what we would think of as so, that's ridiculous. You know, this meat doesn't mean anything. It was just cooked. I did not participate in the idol service worship or anything. I can eat this or any meat. Maybe there were people who felt like it was wrong to eat any meat because of this. How do you know? And all this. We're to give up anything that's going to cause our brother to sin. And that, we think, well, that's hard. That just seems ridiculous. But then, who is our example in this, in chapter 12? Or actually up in 1 John 4:11, the passage we read is what I'm thinking about. Who's our example? Who are we to follow in our being sacrificing ourselves?
Follow what Christ did.
That's exactly right. Follow what Christ did. If me giving up something is important to me, is eat meat. If I never ate another bite of meat the rest of my life, how does that compare with what he did? We seem very selfish and silly sometimes, don't we, when we get, you know, we can get our feathers ruffled and get our feelings hurt and think, you know, why do they have to be that way? Because their faith is not as strong as ours. And we're to do everything we can to help our brother get to heaven. That's the whole point of this class this morning, every time we come to worship, every time we interact with our brethren, everything we do should be the end and goal, the end sight is heaven. That's what's the most important. If you live to be 100 years old on this earth, that is just like one speck on the sand of the whole of every seashore that has in the whole world. And so the important thing is we want to go to heaven and we want to take as many people, help as many people get there as we possibly can. And we have to build our brethren up and encourage one another. And not let, we have, in my lifetime, and I'm not that old, I'm not young, but I'm not that old, but a lot of times what happens in churches, it's, the church will split. It's not over a biblical matter. It's two people in the congregation don't like one another. Their personalities clash, and I want my way. No, I want my way. Well, no, I'm going to get my group, and they're going to line up behind me. Well, okay, well, I'll just get my little group, and we'll line. What happened to brotherly love and encouraging one another and building one another up and sacrificing something that is, it doesn't have anything to do with our salvation. It's just a personal difference, a personal preference. And if we're not careful, we can all fall into that. Okay, any questions or comments about this set of verses? Okay, the next set of verses we're going to look at is Acts 11, 27 through 30. And Amanda, would you read that, please? And then Susan, when she finishes, would you read 2 Corinthians 8, 1 through 5?
Acts 11, 27. Now, at this time, some prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch. One of the men named Agabus stood up and began to indicate by the Spirit that there would certainly be a great famine all over the world. And this took place in the region of Claudius. And in the proportion that any of the disciples had means, each of them determined to send a contribution for the relief of the brethren living in Judea. And this they did, sending it in charge of Barnabas and Saul to the elders.
Okay, and now let's look at 2 Corinthians 8, 1 through 5.
Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much entreaty for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God.
So what are these brethren in these two passages, what are they working on doing, getting done, or doing?
Monetary help.
And the congregation here is so good about that. And we have even known of individuals who would send on top of what the church would send because they felt like they had brethren in need and they could do without something to send. And the collection in Acts 11, this is from the church at Antioch, and this was right after the dispersion when people were scattered and they went everywhere preaching. And we see up in verse 20, they started, before this, they had only been going to the Jews, but at this time in verse 20, they started preaching to Greeks as well as to the Jews. And so when we get down and this offering is being sent, the contribution is being sent, it's Jews and Greeks. And this would have been unheard of just in normal circles because the Greeks were going to say, I'm not sending my money to a Jew. What are you talking about? And also in the contribution, it's the same situation in the contribution in 2 Corinthians. There were several places this contribution was written back about. Paul wrote to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1, starting in verse 1 about this contribution. He also wrote to the Roman church in Romans 15 about it, talking about it, and then here in 2 Corinthians 8, it's all the same collection. And this, again, is to people who are Gentiles sending to Jews once again. And so what this also says is their brethren, it doesn't matter what their color of their skin, what their nationality, what their ethnic background, whatever. If they're our brethren, if they need our help, we should do everything we can to help them. And so many times we think, well, I gave and the church sent money. And that's exactly what these are doing. And so we know that that is one way to do that. But do we have to limit it to that? Can we personally send if we know somebody and maybe the church does it? Maybe it's a time the church can't help, but I can. We can send on an individual basis also to our brethren. And so we as women can encourage our mates in this to think about these things. And when we hear something, sometimes we hear about things they don't hear about. And there have been times when I would mention to Steve something after the fact, and he said, well, I wish you had told me about it 2 weeks ago. So we need to keep these things in mind and mention to our husband things we know and hear so we can work together and help with our finances as well as our spiritual encouragement, because sometimes brethren are in need. I think of that often when the tornadoes go through places, and we always try to find out if there's members of the church who've been affected, or like when Katrina went through and Rita and all those. Sometimes there are people who have lost everything, and we should help our neighbor as much as we can. But if we have a brother who's lost everything, we should really want to try to do everything we can to help them. Okay? Any questions or comments in that area? And sometimes there are women who, well, we have two women here this morning who don't have mates. And sometimes we've known of godly women who did things like this out of their own pocket that people never know about. You just find out about it accidentally, and that's always encouraging also. Okay, any other comments?
Well, when you were talking about that, I was thinking of Amika.
Yes.
You know, she's over in wherever, Singapore. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because on emails people sent, I catch her name. She had sent money
mm-hmm.
or whatever to people. I just admire that.
And, you know, she does that married to a man who's not a Christian.
Right.
And I don't know what kind of grief, if any, he gives her for that. But maybe none. But I think of her also under the edification part, because she's in that little church in Singapore. It was kind of liberal leanings for a long time. I think the group she's at with now is maybe a little more conservative than some that she's been with. But she went to those groups where she thought were saints, and she tried to teach them. And I think, you know, and when she first married Rolf, I worried. I just thought we lost her, you know, because she would miss a lot of church services and things when they were dating, and I was really concerned about Amiko, but she has faith, and she does everything she can. She tries to study with other women, and you know, she's somebody that, how could we encourage Amiko? She's in Singapore. What can we do?
Well,
exactly. Email, send her a letter, and that would mean so much to her to hear from us. And I do occasionally, and I get, you know how it is, you're kind of like a drunk. You do real good, and then you fall off the wagon. And so, but I would encourage me and all of us to think of Amiko and other people that maybe you know that are Christians who maybe are in hard places to encourage them and to remember them, not only in your prayers, but with reaching out and sending them an email. And it's so easy anymore. You know, it's just 2 minutes and a click of a button, and in 30 seconds they hear from you, or whenever they think to check their email. Some are better at that than others. Okay, we have one more responsibility to brethren. Let's look at Galatians 6, 1 and 2. And this is an area that I think sometimes, especially as women, it's easy for us to skip over. Jamie, would you read that, please?
Brothers, if someone is caught in any wrongdoing, you who are spiritual should restore such a person with a gentle spirit, watching out for yourself so that you won't be tempted also. Carry one another's burdens. In this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ.
Okay, so I see two things in this passage that we can do, and what are those?
Will help anybody you know that's in sin.
Okay. Try to restore them. If you know they're in sin, you try to bring them back to God. And the second one I see in verse 2 is bear one another's burdens. And I believe these are burdens that are causing people to be in sin. They've got something, you know, whatever it is. Well, I see people, and I've been guilty of this, that are doing something, and I think, boy, I could never, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't do that. And then you think, Peter. Peter, no more happened to me. And I try to push that as far from my mind as I can think, because, you know, like drinking. Drinking is not something that has ever appealed to me. The stuff stinks. I just think I could never do that. But I'm sure if in the right circumstances and under the right influence, that could happen to me if I don't keep my guard up. But if I'm in that position to where I'm just about to sink there, if somebody's there to hold me up, brethren, to bear my burden, whatever my burden is that's pulling me in this direction, if somebody's there to help me and I feel like I'm not carrying it by myself, whether it's illness, I think sometimes people who are ill and in pain fall into drinking because that dulls the pain, they say. I don't know. And so, or drugs. And we think, well, you know, we could get past that. We just wouldn't do that. But we would. We might. And so we need to bear one another's burdens. Whatever's causing this person to be, they're caught in a trespass. This isn't something that, you know, that they're just thinking about. They're in it. They've been overcome by this. And what can I do to try to pull them back? And then once I pull them back, whatever this was that pulled them in, help them bear that and help them through so they do not fall into this again. And again, it doesn't say, it says brethren, but I'm a brethren. It's a generic thing. It's where the male is used. It's like God created man. He created man and woman, mankind. And so, and sometimes I think with women, our intuition, sometimes you just look at somebody and you know something's not right. And it's easier just to ignore it and go on and think, well, you know, it'll get worked out or somebody else will take care of it. But if we see somebody who looks like they're struggling with their faith, when somebody's not here and you ask them, were you sick this morning? And they say, no, not really. Maybe you need to ask another question. Well, then what was the problem? Why weren't you here? And people that we see who miss occasionally and we ask their loved one maybe and, well, no, they're not really sick. They just didn't make it today. Well, why didn't they make it? Sometimes what's irritating to me is sometimes the loved one doesn't really know the whole story, and they should. But I need to follow up with the person just to be sure, first of all, that the loved one didn't just give me the whole picture. But try to encourage. See, before they get overcome, try to pull them back before they get overcome. But sometimes we as women, especially with other women, can help where a man could not do this at all with the same results that we are able to have. Okay, do we have any questions or comments over any of the responsibility that we have to brethren?
With this one that we just went over, I just wanted to say what caught my attention on reading it is where it says the spirit of gentleness is to have. I mean, is that, did I understand it correctly?
Yes.
That is
correct.
Approach it.
Well, and I think we're given the reason following that, looking to ourselves so that you too won't be tempted. I think we do need to be gentle. Sometimes, just like with someone who falls into drinking, I may not have the patience with them with that I should have because that just seems so foreign to me. But I better realize that it could happen to me, and I think that's what he's teaching us. But gentleness is something that we have to be careful when we define because you can be accused of not being gentle when it's really, no matter, the only way you could not have been accused of anything is just not say anything. So you're going to talk to people and you're going to try to help people and you're going to get false accusations. And so we do need to examine ourselves to be sure that we were gentle, that we were kind, that we did try to do it in an understanding way. But then if they come back and say, well, you were just mean and hateful and butting in my business where you didn't have any. Well, no, I don't accept that. That may be your opinion, but I have to go by God's opinion. And I have a verse here that tells me if I know you're doing something that's sin in your life, that I have to try to reclaim you, to restore you. So just because you get accused of not being gentle doesn't mean you weren't. But you're right, that's the point. We do need to be careful about.
Well, and up in Ephesians 4, it talks about watching your speech, maybe just realizing that we can either tear somebody down or build them up.
And you know, that's a good point, Bobby, because you can take the same words and say them with a different inflection, and they mean totally opposite things. Steve got an article one time about a woman who had gotten, her son was off and he needed help, and he had gotten a letter, and the mother and son kind of had some problems, but she was blind and she couldn't see. And so she had one person read the letter. Well, the son sounded demanding and just almost arrogant. And then a few weeks later, someone else came and read the letter, and the son sounded like he changed his whole attitude. But it wasn't, it was the same letter, same words, but it was the way they were read and the inflection in the voice. That's why I hate to, when I need to talk to somebody about something, I don't like to write them a letter. I don't like to send it in an email. Because they, those black letters on white paper don't always come across the way I mean them. And that way, if you're talking with somebody, and you can see they don't understand, you can work through that. And it's the same thing on the telephone. They may can hear the inflection of my voice, but they can't see my face. They can't see my expression. And so it's better if you have a problem or if you are trying to restore someone, do it face-to-face. If you are trying to encourage someone, and I'm not saying don't like a Nico, if it's just an encouraging thing, but if there's something that's a problem that you need to work through, sometimes you think something that ought to take 5 minutes may take 2 hours. It's kind of like with your kids. You got to work through it and get them convinced, and you got it takes time for them to see the kindness and gentleness. Jamie?
I have a question, because as a teacher, I never ever wrote letters. I didn't call people on phone unless, like, their parents just refused to come. But if you're dealing with, like, a situation at church and the person calls you on the telephone, or, well, in the past they've, you know, done letters and that didn't work, and so now the person's calling you on the cell phone, and you tell them, I really want to have this conversation in person, and they say, I refuse to. Should you just say that, I'm sorry, I can't have this conversation at all, or should you get in and say, okay, I'm going to try to have it with you, but I don't think it's going to really work, because I really feel like we need to meet face-to-face? I mean, what should you do if the person's just like, I'm not going to meet you in person?
Well, Jamie, that's a judgment call on each individual basis. There are some people that I think I would just say, well, I'm sorry, I won't do this, because I want a witness there. That's one thing. When you're having a real issue with somebody, you need a witness, and not just your best friend. Sometimes it's let them pick the witness, or say, okay, we're going to pick a neutral party, somebody who doesn't, you know, kind of don't have a dog in the race either way. They're both our friends, and so they're going to be honest, and they're going, or someone that you know. Even if they are your friend, like I believe Amy, as much as she loves you, if you were in a disagreement with somebody, she could be objective and say, Jamie, you know, maybe you need to consider this. Maybe so that somebody good, somebody like that that you trust, that's going to not just say, oh, just because Jamie said it, she's right. Somebody who's going to say, you know, you need to reconsider this. But there are some people I would not have that conversation with on the phone, because no matter what I say, unless I told them, okay, I'll have this conversation, but I'm going to record it. I'm recording me, and I'm recording you. And if you don't want that, then we're not going to have this conversation. Because they will take what you say, and they will use it against you, and they will make it, they will twist it totally opposite to what you're saying. And so it would just depend. If it was somebody that, you know, I was very, very close to and we'd had a disagreement, and I really felt like we needed to be face-to-face, but I knew that they still loved me enough that they weren't going to try to twist and, you know, it would just be in each individual case would be the way I would do it. Okay, I really want to finish this. So we're going to, the family part, I'm really just going to kind of skip. Steve is really covering that. We know our responsibility to our parents is to honor them and take care of their physical needs. It's interesting, I did want to mention 1 Timothy 5:16. That is a case written to women. As a woman, if you have a mother or a grandmother or an aunt or some family member that needs to be taken care of financially, that is your responsibility. And that's a God-given responsibility. Of course, husbands, we've been covering that, to submit to them, always do them good. Our children, he will cover that. Our responsibility is to teach them, to love them with this caring love, to have discipline, and to build their character. These are verses that and I have some extra verses, like I put on discipline, Proverbs 22:15, 23:13, 29:15. These are things that Steve, I know, will carry out further in the class that we're having. And then number four, the last responsibility or duty that I see that we have is to teach the Word of God. And this really falls under number one when you get right down to it, to love our neighbor. What better love can we have for our neighbor than to teach them God's word and to save their soul? You know, you can say you love somebody and you can have a feeling of goodwill and affection towards somebody, but if you really love them, what are you going to try to do? If you know they're lost and dying, going to hell, what should our greatest responsibility be? Acts 8, 1 through 4, and we already looked at this a little bit, farther down in the chapter. Let's look at verse 3. We see here, this is when the persecution really began in earnest. Verse 3, Paul began ravaging the church, entering house after house, dragging off men and women. Men and women both were being put in prison for their faith and their proclamation that Jesus was the Son of God. And then these are the people who, when they were scattered, taught. So men and women taught the Word of God and tried to save other souls. And of course, in Titus 2, chapter 3, verse 4, what are older women commanded to do there? Teach younger women. And we need to look for those opportunities. And what is real interesting, we have two young women here today, but you're older women to somebody. The first time Celeste, I guess she was in her early 30s, somebody caught a young girl that she knew who had just gotten married. She was like in her early 20s and gotten married, and she called and asked Celeste something. And Celeste called me and she said, Mother, why is she calling me? I said, because you're older to her, and you're somebody that she looks up to as a godly woman. And so everything is relative. And yes, I think this is more to older women who've raised their children, trying to train and teach the younger women. But you're an older woman to somebody. And be thankful that you have left that kind of legacy, that they will come and talk to you. But even if they don't come and talk to you, if you see someone, help them. And if you don't feel like you're doing it as an older woman, do it as a Christian, because maybe they'll listen to you where they won't listen to someone else. Okay, is there any questions? We kind of went through this rapidly. But if you have any questions or comments, okay, we will do the motivation to fulfilling these duties next week.